Welcome to the Autism Roundtable. I'm Leah Gross, founder of Circle Care Services. I'll bring you autism experts from all kinds of fields for helpful parenting ideas, insights, and strategies. Tune in for learning and support and connection. Welcome, Jen Bailey, to the Autism Roundtable. Jen Bailey comes with so much nice experience in the field of autism. Jen, can you introduce yourself? Tell us about your experiences personally and professionally as well.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm really grateful to be here. Glad to know that this is going on in the world because I think our kids need all the support they can get. And this is just really nice to know this is a resource for them and for families. I'm a mom of three, one of whom is diagnosed on the spectrum with high functioning autism. With that in mind, we had some lovely experiences actually with our educational system out here. They have a navigator program which helps these children navigate social situations and just life in general. And so I was involved in that. Just having wonderful kids around us who are on the spectrum also kind of informed my mind and my thoughts on this. And with that, I'm a children's author. And so I chose to write some books. The first book was a picture book called A Friend for Henry, which was about the navigating of a child on the spectrum, finding a friend. And those have turned into a emergent reader is what they call it. So an early chapter book series for kids, kids on and off the spectrum to read on their own.
Okay, Jen, we want to hear a little bit about your inspiration in writing these books, because I know you had amazing messaging and we want to hear about that as well. But tell us a little bit about the journey to being inspired to write specifically about autism, and then we'll go into your messaging.
Certainly, certainly. So, yes, when our child was diagnosed, it was third grade. And we always knew that our kiddo was a little quirky, shall we say, socially young, although academically fine, physically fine, everything else was fine. And in third grade, we had moved from Virginia to Kansas City specifically. And after 2 weeks in the school, I received a phone call from the principal of the school asking me to come in. And it turns out our kiddo was not blending in very well. Things were very, very difficult. This was a huge disruption. We just didn't know how huge. Fortunately, our principal had a doctorate in special education and in child development. And also, fortunately, we had a third grade teacher who, oh my gosh, she had a master's degree in childhood education, was very much a well-respected. She'd been a teacher for over 25 years. They had observed our child for those first 2 weeks. And I remember being called in and being asked if I'd ever heard of Asperger's or autism. And I thought to myself, I have a lot of people, nurses and doctors in my life, in my family life. And I thought, oh, it's the diagnosis du jour. This was probably in 2005. And I thought, yes, I've heard of it, but, you know, come on. Well, they gave me a test to take home to fill out for our child. And as I was filling it out, it was like, oh, the scales fell from my eyes. And it was like, oh, this explains a lot of things. And I will admit, by this time in third grade, you know, it's no longer quirky and cute. Now we're expecting children to be a bit more of a social, civic creature. And so things were coming to a head. Our child was having difficulties. And those difficulties could have started to showcase themselves in behavioral disorders. So I'm really grateful.
And what kind of behaviors were you seeing? Was it...
We were seeing not aggression towards other children or other people, but definitely self-aggression, some self-harm, scratching, pulling of hair, some things like that. And just a disengagement. Sometimes we would say frozen, that there was just a frozen expression on the face and all of this that to be honest, we kind of took as being stubborn and being willful and could have seen as not, just not caring. And then we found out that, oh, there was so much more. It was so nice in a way to receive this diagnosis. And yes, we went on and had it confirmed with doctors and with psychiatrists and psychologists. But to understand, it helped us have a better understanding of how best to approach parenting this child. And of course, people who have, every child is different. Every child needs their own approach. But this kind of reminded us of that. And probably one of the best examples that I got was from our counselor who said, and let's say everybody leaves with a cup, with an empty cup. They wake up in the morning, they have an empty cup, and every little annoyance goes into that cup. Most of us have the ability, we're walking around with, I don't know, maybe not a big gulp, but maybe, you know, a decent sized cup. And throughout the day, we pour that out. We pour out the annoyances. We know how to shed the things that are bothering us. And he said, and your child is coming in with a Dixie cup or with a medicine dosage cup that you get on the top of like a NyQuil and doesn't know how to pour those out. Think of how fast that cup fills up. And you've got to help them learn how to shed that and how to move forward. It's an image. I mean, I'm a visual learner anyway. It was an image that stuck with me, that helped me in my moments of, oh, let's say frustration or something. I was like, okay, if I'm frustrated, how full is this kid's cup? Just good stuff that we received here in our new state that we were in from our education system and from the people around us. Yeah.
Wow. So you at that point, you had like almost a shift of how you were going to parent this child. So what shifted? How did your thought process change? And I'm sure there are listeners going through something similar. So I think that could shed some light for them.
Certainly. So the first thing that I'd like to do is I'm going to admit something here that it took me a while to be okay to admit to myself, was I had to grieve the loss of the child I thought I had. Now, please don't judge me harshly for that. We all have these anticipations, right? We all have these ideas of what our kid's going to accomplish. And in Virginia, where we had come from, this child had been diagnosed gifted. Oftentimes that is the case with a child. High-functioning autism used to be called Asperger's. So, you know, you're planning, right, in your head, oh, this kid's going to do all these things. I'm going to tell you, this kid is still doing all these things. But I had to grieve a bit thinking this child is now going to have a harder time figuring out how to do those things. So that was the first thing that I would like to tell parents. Please do not be hard on yourself for thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be a harder road than we thought. That's just the way that it's going to be. But it's also, at least in my experience, a joyful and surprising road. I started to witness and to really look at all the wonderful ways that this child was interpreting the world. When we did live in Virginia, we were right outside of DC. We used to go to the National Zoo a lot. And I remember this kid was fascinated by the zebras. And I thought, why the zebras? The zebras are not that interesting. We have pandas here. We have tigers. We have all these amazing creatures. But it was the zebras that they would want to stare at. So finally, I just kind of asked. I was like, what are you looking at? And the response was, I'm trying to decide if they're white with black stripes or black with white stripes. And that's another thing that I said, I'm going to hold that tight, that this child has a different way of seeing the world and how wonderful to get the opportunity to experience the world in this unique way.
Wow. You're awesome. I love your perspective.
Well, I think that we're a curious family. We like to research and understand and read. We read a lot. And
I was getting ready to say that it sounds like, you know, for the creative mind and for those of us that enjoy learning, you know, it's almost like, okay, here's a challenging road ahead, and you're going to have to take out a new playbook. It's not like the straight playbook that, you know, everyone just takes and goes with. This is going to be a playbook that's going to be manifesting itself every single day, and you're going to be the driver of that, and you're going to do your research, and you're going to find the information that's needed and the best path to teach this child. Like you said, there's what to grieve, because no, you're not up in the beach with your feet up and reading your book.
Right.
We're going in a different direction, but there's adventure in it, and it's exciting, and it's creative, and let's hear where your creativity took you.
Well, because there can absolutely be adventure. And I will tell you, I was not the best mom every day. I mean, we there are just some days for any child. We might not be the best parent that day, but my gosh, we do our best, and we do our best until we can do better, right? And so I really do want to encourage parents, have some grace for yourself. Just be kind to yourself, because you being kind to yourself helps you be kind to the small people who need you. So it's okay. It's okay, and it's going to be okay. Yeah.
It's going to be okay. And then also, like, putting supports in to really help you get through. What kind of supports did you put in place that really helped you pave that road and feel successful and not get stuck in the sort of grief of it?
Oh, well, I mean, we had, you know, it was something to learn about, and it was still our child. This is something I think that's very important. People hear autism and they think some very specific things. But as I said, every child is unique to themselves. And a child with autism is still a child first and not a diagnosis. And that's really important to remember. You are parenting the child, not the diagnosis. That just adds, I don't know, a layer.
It does. You're the cheerleader. You're really there to nurture and to love. And really, like you said, be that parent, because he's only got, you know, the two of you. So you got to be there for them and show up for that role as well. So tell us a little bit about your inspiration behind your books, their theme, and why you thought it was so important to share it with the world.
Well, it was interesting, because I was writing books about other things. And what people should know is the world of writers, it's very solitary to write a book. So you kind of end up getting a writing group. Every writer I know, every author I know kind of has a group. And my group kept telling me, you should write about your child, or you should have a character who's on the spectrum. And I kept saying, no, I'm not going to do it. And I realized it was because I was probably too close to it, and it was still too fresh, and I still didn't know enough, or at least feel that I could represent that character well. So it took me a while to figure all of that out, and then I started, and there were some wonderful books at the time out for young adults and for middle schoolers, but I didn't see any in the elementary sphere, and I didn't see any specifically picture book sphere. And I know that my child was having trouble making friends, but I knew there was a lot of effort and a lot of thought that was going into how to do that, how to approach somebody, and how to see if they could be a good friend. It's tough when your kid is the weird kid in class. It can hurt you as the parent, because you see it is hurting your child. But I knew that my kid was giving it the best that they could. And I thought, let's catch these kids a little early in their academic life, like so kindergarten, first grade, and let's kind of share this experience if I can figure out how to do it.
So you're trying in your head, you're trying to say that you wanted to give the other children that are interacting with the child with autism a little bit of perspective of maybe the struggle that child with autism or child lacking social skills might be experiencing.
Correct, correct. These are called mirror window and sliding door books, believe it or not. I didn't learn that until after I'd written one.
So tell us, what does that
Yes.
mean?
So if you're looking around and you can actually, look it up on the internet, if you're looking for a mirror window sliding door books. So a mirror means that the child who is represented sees themselves in the book, and that is always a wonderful thing for a child to see themselves represented in a story. It's very empowering. It's fantastic. That's why I just love the inclusion that we're finding more and more
I
in
bet.
in our books for kids. So there's the mirror part. The window part is that a child who is not either has this disability or this ethnicity or this religion or this whatever can observe, can look through a window almost into this other person's life and see what it's like. And that builds empathy. And empathy is the one of the best things that we can ask for and that we can teach our kids to have. So
I love
there's
that.
empathy. And this.
That is great. And I'm a therapist, so we're always, trying to work through teaching emotions and right, we'll do the role play sometimes, but I love this concept of this mirror where you're really seeing empathy played out. And as kids, obviously I read books, and now that you're saying it, I'm connecting the dots. Oh, that was
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
and I always was reading books about, wizards and hobbits and so I didn't often see me, a young girl, on an adventure, which is probably why I connected with hobbits because I was small. So, I mean, so but I still felt very empowered to go and do. So this is what I was hoping to do. And the sliding door part of this is that you're opening up this experience to let any child step through into inhabiting this experience. So it was really important for me in this book to, first of all, have it from the child on the spectrum, to have it from their perspective. What are they feeling? What are they doing? Also, it was really important for me not to be didactic. I did not want to be teaching any kind of moral lesson. I didn't want to be judgmental in any way. I just wanted to simply show what was going on.
Feelings, emotions, wow, and really sharing that with the readers.
Yes. I mean, in the last part of it was I didn't want to ever say that the character was on the spectrum in the book. So the main character's name is Henry, and the way that I looked at it was, if you met Henry, Henry wouldn't walk up to you and say, "Hi, I have autism." Henry would say, well, if he said anything to you right away, he would say, "I'm Henry." And that was really important to me. I didn't want this book to be pigeonholed, which I think it would have been. It would have been put on a shelf for parents with children who have children with disabilities, instead of being put in the picture book shelf, which is where it belongs because it's a picture book about a child. So that these were things that were in my head, and that's a, believe it or not, it's a tall order. Also
Yeah. You have to think about where this was being categorized, where you're going to find them in the library. It's a lot of pre-planning going on here,
well,
and
in
you
my
did a great job.
but it's, I mean, and I got have to give the credit to my publisher. I mean, it's these are books that I'm traditionally published. I have an agent. I have editors. I have publishers. So Chronicle Books is the publisher who took a punt on this and said, let's do it. And I'm ever grateful
Wow.
to them.
That's great. That's great. Okay, so go on and tell us what was the message in how many books do we have so
So there's
far?
a picture book that started it. I mean, can I, I'll just, so
Yes, please show it to us.
the
Oh,
picture book
wow.
that started is A Friend for Henry. And it received the American Library Association is our big, obviously, association for children's literature. That's where you get the Newbery Award, the Caldecott Award. Those are awards you probably are familiar with. They also have the Schneider Family Award, which this book received the honor in 2020. And that
I
is,
love it. Congratulations.
it's specifically for a book that represents positively a child with some form of disability, blindness, deafness, autism, Down syndrome, something like this. So it's, but it's, yes, but just really, really proud of that. That so this was the first book out, and it was a picture book. And when it did well, and when it won that award, I had already an idea for a second picture book in mind. This is where it got kind of interesting. I shared that with my publisher, and they were like, "Yeah, you know, Henry's not a picture book series character," which was like, "Huh, I find that strange because we've just had success." And they said, "Well, no, he's not a fancy Nancy. He's not a grumpy monkey. He's not a dirty dog. He's not a in-your-face extroverted character." They said, "We need to kind of get away from where mom and dad are buying the books and let the child find the book." And so he became this smaller. It's a what is it called? It's yeah, the emergent reader. It's a little chapter book, five chapters.
I love
And
that.
what's lovely is we were recognized again. So again, the Schneider family gave us the big award this year. And then you might recognize this name, Theodore Seuss Geisel. Yes, the Dr. Seuss Award for best emergent reader.
Congratulations. This is so
So
fun.
it was very exciting, very validating that not only was this considered a good book for children with disabilities, also considered a good book for early readers. So
For early
this is
readers.
designed for young kids, you know, to pick up and to read on their own. Careful design here. There's a lot of illustrations. One thing that I found really fascinating, if I may share another anecdote,
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
I was on a panel with some teens, who one particular who was on the spectrum, and an educator, and we were discussing this series of books. And the teen was talking about how much she liked them, which was lovely. I mean, she was a
Yes.
lovely person. She said, but what she found particularly comforting was all of these books, highly illustrated on the front, but in the inside, there are color washes. So they're grays and blues and calmer colors. And she said, for her, because she can get sensory overload rapidly, she thought, you know, learning language, learning how to read, and then being assaulted by color, and that was kind of how she phrased it, would have just put her into that locked stage where she couldn't proceed. But having these colors be calm and gentle, she actually felt supported and felt very comfortable moving forward reading the story. And that has meant the world to me.
That's amazing. And I, like I said, I love how you did your research in these books, you know, to be able to really get it out there and represent your message. So what was your second book about?
Oh, okay. So Henry, like always, is we Henry has gone up a grade. And in this book, things are not like always. There's going to be a surprise parade at the end of the week, and it's kind of how Henry deals with that because share time is supposed to happen on Friday, not a parade. And so it's just the stress of this one simple change of schedule, but how it derails him for the week. And how he works through it until he can finally, he always wins at that. Let me just let you,
He's like the
he wins at
superhero.
the end. He comes up with his own way of pouring out that Dixie cup and of figuring out how to make it all make sense for him. So there's trials, there's issues. I mean, I have two other kids, and both of them like a schedule too. One particularly would be like, what are we doing? When are we doing it? And so the thought of changing the schedule was always an issue. So these, you know, these books, I'm hoping, you know, another reason not to say that
Will
they're failure,
resonate.
right? They're going to resonate with an introvert. They're going to resonate with the quiet kid. They're going to resonate with the anxious kid. I hope that's what they do.
Oh, you're going to be very an inspiration to all. Now, I wanted to hear from you, like, as a parent of both neurotypical and neurodivergent children, if you could get a message out there to parents about how to message things properly to their children, or what their neurotypical child should know about a neurodivergent child and how to how they want to be treated. What would it be that you would say?
You know, I would just say patience. Patience is
That's
just,
simple.
yeah, I know. It's a hard thing, though. I mean, you've
Yes.
got little kids and they're wanting to go, they're wanting to get on with the program, they're wanting to do the thing. But it's patience. Take a step back, give this child space, not just in conversation time, but physical space as well. Give them a chance to formulate what they want to say, and the chance to say it. I'm going to tell you, in our house, that's hard. We're fast talking, lots of talking people.
Yeah.
And so this one kid will have to kind of put up a hand. He's like, okay, everybody, shh, be quiet.
Yes. Yes.
You know, because it's hard to keep up sometimes. And if there seems to be a non sequitur, if the conversation seems to be going in some odd direction, there's probably a link there somewhere. Ask about it. Why would, when we're talking about apples, why would you say dump truck? Why? And find out what the connection is. And that can be a conversation in itself. So
be curious also. So have patience. Teach patience, teach space, teach giving children the time to process and to give a response, which, like you said, that's a tall order to teach, but we're going to, you know, I love that. I really think that's amazing. And then your second point is that you should, what was that second thing?
I loved your, just narrowing it down to curiosity.
It's curiosity. Like, you know, be curious.
Yeah, be curious. Be curious about
ask.
How this person sees the world and why they're interpreting it that way.
I like that. I like that. And also, you know, I think that we, in like social settings, a lot of times we won't ask things because we're scared that we're going to embarrass somebody, we're going to say the wrong thing, that person didn't really want to share. And really teaching children to have open conversations and not be shy, and really be interested in the next person, be curious. And if you ask genuinely, and you ask it because you're interested, not because you're judging, not because you want to make fun, but because you want to know that person better, you could get really beautiful relationships going. And like you said, you could be that much more inclusive.
Yeah, that is a really important way to put it. That it's non-judgmental. It's with authenticity. And you know, and so maybe you're not interested in that. That's okay. But do come up with ways to be inclusive. You know, to allow them to have their own space. Maybe in your play world, if you're all playing, what's the latest craze? Gaga ball.
Yeah.
Right. Like, well, how does this person want to play Gaga ball? They might not want to be in the pit, but they might be wanting to watch everybody to see if somebody got double tapped or somebody got this or something. You know, there's ways that we can include people that don't necessarily have to conform with how we want to play the game or be part of the experience, but let them find their own space and be okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're also like tapping into maybe like the empathy piece of, which is a theme in your book, but the idea of really putting yourself into the other person's shoes and thinking how they're viewing it. Like we always think exactly like what you said. If I enjoy jumping on the trampoline, everyone enjoys jumping on the trampoline, but right, it's not the case. And it's a great lesson that if we were to impart to children, I think it would go very far.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all different, which makes us the same.
Exactly. Exactly. And you touched on the introvert and extrovert. And I'd love to hear how you would sort of term each one and how you think they differ socially.
Well, I think that the extrovert, especially in a school setting, and I look at that because these books all take place in a school setting. And I think of that's, you know, home setting is different. But in that school or social setting, the extrovert gets the attention. The kid who's busy, the kid who's got ideas, the kid who perhaps is misbehaving in some way was the one who's going to get the attention of the teacher, of the parents, of the other children. So they're kind of, I mean, there's things going on there too, but so they're kind of easy to see. The introverted kid, not so much. Probably has just as much going on, but it's all kept inside because sharing it might not feel comfortable, might not feel safe. So it's important, as I said, that's where I think giving kids the space comes in. when I do school visits, I always try to find the different kids. I mean, yes, you're going to have kids who are raising their hands, even if they don't have a question. But they want you to see them, and that's great. And I try to find those kids who are quieter, and not to put them on the spot or shine a spotlight on them, because a lot of times they don't want that. But like there's an activity that I do, and I always need somebody to help me write words. And so that's one of the things I'll ask, who's really good at spelling? It's usually I found an introverted kid. Or who's good at writing? And I ask them to be my scribe, give them a title, right? And then they can sit quietly in their spot and do their thing. And then at the end, we get to see what they wrote for us. And, you know, they get recognized for their strengths instead of having weaknesses pointed out, which really aren't weaknesses. They're just differences.
Differences. That's a huge component. It's very, very amazing to look at how differences. They can learn, they do have feelings, it's just a little bit
Just
different.
different. It may express itself differently, display itself differently. It's just different. And we have to be okay with that. Differences are okay. Differences make us stronger. Differences help us understand things because we will totally, especially when we get older, we will totally silo the way that we think about something. And if you ever hear somebody say, "Well, it ought to," oh my gosh, that phrase drives me crazy. Well, it ought to nothing. Let's figure it out. It might be fine for you. It might not be fine for somebody else. But you know, let's ask.
Let's ask. Exactly. And then I think in past conversations, we spoke about sensory overload in the social setting. I'd love to touch on that.
Yes. So, one of the things as in our family, as we research more and more about what was known about autism and what was supposed about autism and all of this, we kept seeing things like, oh, you know, these people won't make eye contact. They don't have an emotional sensibility. They are not interested in social situations. And I just found that to be false, to be incredibly false. Our child was one of the most empathetic in our family, very funny, dry sense of humor, just engaged, but engaged in a different way. And so it became clear, especially with that cup analogy, that what was happening was there was less opportunity to shed sensory overload, less of an inclination to be able to stand it, even, you know, loud noises or a tag on the back of the shirt or something that we might feel but disregard, like a neurotypical person might feel and disregard, a neurodivergent person might not be able to let go of. And so I did feel that, especially with my child, it wasn't so much a lack of emotion as an overabundance. So much empathy, so much feeling that they would shut down because they didn't know how to process it. And that, I will admit, that still happens to this day. We had an issue yesterday because it snowed, and so the road was slippery, and so driving was hard, and there was a problem. And that just happened yesterday, and my child is 28. But we talked about it, and they drove anyway. But there was a moment of just needing to have a call with Mamas, which was, you know, prayer.
He was driving the car though.
Yes.
Oh, yay. Okay. So wait, I would love to hear a little bit about your journey. Where now he's 28. He stayed in school till which point?
I got an associate's degree.
Oh, wow.
Just hadn't decided what to do, but is looking at an MFA. I myself have an MFA, a Master of Fine Arts in Writing. They're a brilliant author, quite honestly, a beautiful writer, and so considering going for an MFA program.
Wow. And how was navigation of, after school, like dealing with the college? Was that, did it bring its own set of social issues?
They didn't go and live there. That was we
Oh.
thought we might be able to try it. That did not work for our child. Their best friend worked fine. Worked fine. They were able to go and live in the dorm and do the thing, but it did not work for our kid. And guess what? You got to be fine with that. because every child is different, every child, but managed to go to a local college and get the associate's degree and is now a data analyst.
Oh,
So
wow.
yeah, has a job, has a car, has friends.
That's great. But you know what? That's great. And at 28, he's still reaching out to mom to help to regulate.
Yes, and not sometimes mom needs to reach out for a regulation. Because
You know
I mean,
what? It
you
goes
know.
two ways. Hey, listen, I regulate all day, right? What does regulation mean? It's that we're talking our brains down. Sometimes we need, someone to help us through that as well.
Exactly.
Love that. Love that. Okay. Last time we spoke, you brought up a topic about the CDC, and I would love to hear, give us some information about what's going on in the CDC, what's come out recently, and what are your thoughts?
So I'll just be very blunt about it.
Go for it. We want to hear.
I find it distressing. I find what is happening currently with our current head of national health. So the CDC has now put an asterisk next to the position that vaccines do not cause autism. And there's an asterisk there, and the asterisk then, when you go find it, says it is not an evidence-based claim. And I find this incredibly harmful. I find it inaccurate. And I think that unfortunately, it puts the CDC in a position where a lot of their advice now can be questioned. I do believe that people are great advocates for themselves. You need to be an advocate for yourself, but there are also people who study, who learn, who test, who do things that we cannot do, and we have to realize that they've done the work that I don't know how to do. I don't know how to run a study on whether, vaccines are causing autism, but our country did. They did a lot of it. The one person who had said that there was an issue so long ago was totally disproved, and removed from the medical profession. And I think that they weren't even, here in the States. I think that they were in Europe, in the UK, actually. And it was totally discredited. The studies that are being used right now for this asterisk, when I looked to see what it was a few dozen parents who strongly embrace alternative medicine being surveyed, and they said it was their opinion. That's not good enough for me. It's just not. And they one of the things that they're saying is, well, vaccines given in to infants and to young children has risen, and so have the rates of autism. And I would say correlation is not causation, meaning just because
Exactly.
these two things are happening does not mean they are linked in any way at all. And I would say autism might
What
be
about
autism.
Tylenol and autism?
I have never used Tylenol in my life. So you could not say that I used Tylenol, and so therefore my child was born with this condition. That is not it. I now look back through, I have an uncle now that we can tag and say, he has high functioning
It's
autism.
genetic.
It just was not diagnosed. And so I would say, think about that. Think about all those quote unquote quirky people. Supposedly now they think Mozart had autism, right? They would have been diagnosed today because now we understand. But there were a lot of quirky people who used to study really interesting things. And knew the train schedule backwards and forwards, or knew.
Yeah, and also like a lot of times we meet very gifted children, and I always think like if they grew up in the days where they didn't weren't strapped to a chair for 8 hours to do their learning, and they were learning what really interests them and could really dig their fingers deep into it instead, which
This.
is I would assume what happened way back when, right? So,
Right. You were allowed to
right.
go off and study the bugs for 12 hours a day if you wanted to.
Yeah, whatever it is that you want, right? So, how well would our children, some of those children do, you know?
Exactly. I think we do have, unfortunately, I think some difficulties in our system. We need to get kids moving more. We need to let them not study to a test, but learn. They're not learning how to learn. They're learning how to study. And that's unfortunate.
Yes. Learning ways we teach children, individualized ways, especially in the special ed field. And you've lived the special ed field. Not everyone is cut out anymore, or I don't know if ever, to just be strapped in a chair and learn that way. And finding alternative methods like the Montessori method is really cool, or DIR method, but these are all very specialized, and you're not getting them in the regular school system.
You aren't, because we unfortunately we don't have enough teachers. We have big classes. We're just trying to, it's oh yeah. I have people in the education system in my life too. So it's like you hear a lot of, but I know one thing though. They're working hard and they're trying their best. We're teaching to tests, and we really need to teach kids how to be discerning, how to learn, how to figure things out. I worry a little bit with the AI. They're saying that we get this thin veneer now of understanding, whereas before we had to dig to understand and to get information and to figure out what was what. And now we just look at that first AI generated answer on the top of Google. It's not always correct, people.
No, you have to really check. AI is really it's such a cool tool though. Like, I actually wanted to research something recently. I went in, asked for all peer-reviewed studies on, I was researching dyslexia with multi-sensory integration, and what they pull up is fabulous. But yeah, you got to go back to the article and read it yourself.
You have to know how to do that search. That's one of the wonderful things out there. That's something that we should be teaching kids how to do. It's like how to dig down, how to learn how to find the things and how to search. How to do the, what is it, the special Google? You put a comma here or a minus sign or whatever it is. Just cool stuff. Yeah.
I actually recently went back for my second master's degree, which is I'm almost done my program for my master's in applied behavior analysis, BCBA, and going back to school like 15 years later, the hardest part was the technology, figuring out the blackboard and the new input and ChatGPT. It's like, it's fabulous, like all the new stuff that's out there, and we have to just keep on staying current because it's moving so fast.
We do, yeah, we absolutely do. It's yes, ex yeah. My youngest is in cybersecurity, so as he tells me, says, when I have an issue, he's like, put in a ticket. We have the family ticket. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. He's like, okay, I'll be over. Make me a pie. I'll show you how to do the thing. And he's like, and I'm like, I taught you how to use the computer. What has happened?
Yes. And it's moving fast. But yeah, like you said, we also have to really integrate that into our education system. We'd like for it to move just as fast as technology is.
Especially on the discerning side.
So, Jen, if you had to give a message to caregivers of children on the autism spectrum, what like message would that be?
Oh, I guess kind of along the lines of what I had said previously was be kind to yourself. Well, because it helps you be kind to other people. Embrace the day with patience and curiosity, and realize that yeah, that we're that we all have different ways of viewing our world and what's going on in it. Yeah, be kind.
Be kind. Thank you, Jen, for really shedding some beautiful light and really broadening the autism world through your literature. Where can people find your books, and or follow you or anything like that?
Oh, okay. I am out there. My website is woeful, but it is www.jenbailey.com. So pretty easy, just my name. You'll find me. There's ways to reach me there. My books are anywhere books are sold, quite honestly. They're, Barnes and Noble, your local indie. Oh yeah, love local independent bookstores. They are awesome. Of course, they're also on Amazon.
Well, that's an important one for those of us who have kids and can't get out. That's where we're going to get it. Yeah.
They are absolutely there for sure.
And the library.
And the library, thank you. Yes, because gosh, I love librarians. I mean, I never would have made it through my MFA without them. So they're wonderful. I spent a lot of my youth in the library. And so I would say the yeah, there are so far there are three of the early readers or emergent reader books out right now. A fourth one called Henry Upside Down comes out in April, and then a year from now, Henry Versus the Universe
Love
comes
that.
out.
I
So
love
there are five
that.
so far, and he's going to be in a little box set, and which I find hysterical that like we're putting Henry in a box, because I know my kid is not in a box. So.
Oh, that is. I love that. I love that. And have you stopped writing your other type of work? Are you solely focused on Henry these days?
I'm not. I'm writing other works as we speak. I actually owe my agent some pages on another series.
Okay, what are you writing? What's the.
So it's a little bit, as for kids who would be a little bit older, it's another chapter book series about a boy named Jonah who's wanting to go and play baseball this summer instead of like sit around with his parents. They sell real estate. And in order to get this done, in order to try to get on the team, his imaginary friend comes back to quote unquote help him, but is no help at all. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. We're going to be looking out because you're so absolutely fabulous. We love your messaging and thank you for coming on and sharing all your thoughts with the community.
I'm really grateful for the chance to come and sit with you and have this talk, and to like be told, no, tell us what you think is like really
Yes.
wonderful.
I love that. I love hearing
Thank
everyone's thoughts. We got to get
you.
out there. We all have to have a voice. And thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.